We're up to Parshat Pinchas. So our parsha begins with God giving a covenant of peace to Pinchas. We'll do a quick overview. And Hashem says it's thanks to him that the plague stopped. And Hashem tells us to hold it against the Midianites for what they did to us. We have a count of Israel. This is the final count before Moshe's passing. And Hashem says, this is how you divide the land of Israel. You use a goral, you do a lot. And based on these names, you're going to divide it. And then the daughters of Tzlavchot come forward and say, what about our portion, our father's portion? He had no sons, he only had daughters. And God sides with them. He says, they're right, they should get their father's double portion. And then God tells Moshe, come ascend this mountain and see the land of Israel, because you're going to pass away. And Moshe asks Hashem, please appoint a leader so that the people will have a leader after I pass. And Hashem tells him to appoint Yoshua in front of everyone. They should see that you put your hands on him and that he will be the one who questions the Kohen Gadol, and I will answer him through the Kohen Gadol. And then we have the parsha of the Korbanot, the mitzvah of the Korban Tamid, the double sacrifice every day, morning and evening. The mitzvah of the sacrifices of Musaf, the extra sacrifice for Rosh Chodesh, the extra sacrifices for Pesach, for Shavuos, for Rosh Hashanah, for Kippur, and then for Sukkos. So every Yom Tov we basically read the Korbanos from here, from Parshas Pinchas. This is where the Torah tells us about the Musaf sacrifice. So that's our Parsha in a nutshell. That's Parshas Pinchas. So now let's review the Parsha with more depth. Moshe Rabbeinu was the son of the king, right? The adopted son of Pharaoh. And he goes out into Egypt and he looks around and he sees his brethren, the Jews, suffering. And Moshe wonders, why? Why are my brothers suffering more than any other nation? I see all the slaves in Egypt and the ones who are worst off are the Jews. Why? What did they do to deserve such punishment? And Moshe's wondering this, and as he's wondering it, he sees an interesting sight. He sees an Egyptian beating a Jew. The Jew on the ground, his name is Dasan. We've met him before. And Dasan is lying on the floor and the Egyptian is beating him to the point where Moshe sees the Jew is going to die. Why is the Egyptian beating him? Because early that morning, the Egyptian came to Dasan's home and told him, get out of bed, go to work. And took Dasan out to the fields, and Dasan's discombobulated. He's starting to work, and then the Egyptian goes back to the Jew's home, slips into bed with his wife, and sleeps with her, and the woman thinks it's her husband. And then the Egyptian gets up to leave the house, and Dasan was standing out in the field in the middle of the night working, and he sees no one's to his right, no one's to his left, no one's around. So he realizes there must be some kind of mistake, and he comes back home. And when he comes back home, he figures out what's happened. So he goes out, and the Egyptian sees him, and he doesn't want to get into trouble. So he starts beating Dasan to a bloody pulp, and he figures he'll beat him to death. No one will ever ask any questions. And Moshe understands this is what's going on. So he runs onto the scene, kills the Egyptian, buries him in the ground. And the next day, he comes out, and he sees Dasan, and he's in a fight. Only this time, he's in a fight with his own brother. And he lifts his hand to sock his brother, and Moshe says, Russia, how could you hit your brother? And then he says, hey, wait a second, buddy. You're going to do that same thing to me like you did to the Egyptian yesterday? I'm going to Pharaoh. Huh? Moshe just saved his life, and he says, I'm going to Pharaoh. Moshe says, Achein, noda hadavar. Now I know what's going on here. Until now, I couldn't figure out why are the Jews suffering more than anyone else. Now I see why. They deserve it. Why? Because Dasan just told him, I'm going to go rat to Pharaoh on you. Wait a second. One slimy person. And Moshe judges the whole Jewish people? So you see, Dasan was willing to rat on him. Agreed. Granted. But why does Moshe surmise that this explains why all the Jews have to suffer? One guy. What about the rest of the Jews?
Maybe the majority of the Jews behave like this.
Maybe what?
Well, The majority of the Jews.
You see, until this moment, Moshe didn't know why. Until this moment, he couldn't figure out why.
Because a chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
Maybe, I hear.
Most of the Jews died before they left, so maybe they actually were like mostly like 20% left or fewer or something.
A lot of them were wicked and evil. Kind of stupid, I guess. I don't see like...
I'll tell you what I think. I don't have an accurate source, but I think the answer lies in our parsha. Pinchas stands up from the crowd. Everyone's watching. Some people are crying. Some people are protecting the perpetrators. One man stands up. One man grabs a spear and puts it through the perpetrators. And what does the Torah say? He brought back my anger from Israel. Meaning sometimes we say society breeds something. The fact that Dasa knew, I could go rat on Moshe. Nothing will happen to me tomorrow. You know, in some societies when you rat on someone, you know you're not going to live to tell the tale. But Dasa knew he could get away with it. That means there's something wrong with the society. You have one man protecting you, one politician, one prince who came out there to save your life, and you can get away with ratting on him. That tells you something about where the Jewish people were holding. And if Zimri could stand there on the rooftop, stand there by the tent, publicly displaying his brazenness against Moshe and against God, and the Jewish people are, they're weeping, they're talking, they're protecting, each one's doing his thing, but no one stands up, so then that's a reflection on the people. Because if someone really cared, and then he'd stand up and do it. And when Pinchas does it, that reflects on everyone. We're a people that have values, and you see, here's one person who reflected those values. But if no one would have stood up, you see, people are dying like flies. Why are people dying like flies? Because God says, where are you? So those of them that sinned, and where's everyone else?
What about Moshe in that situation?
Moshe was... to some degree, Moshe let Pinchas take the banner. On one level, if Moshe would have charged, he would have had to wage a battle. Because the tribe of Shimon was standing there all around him with their swords drawn. And they said, no one's touching our leader. And if Moshe wanted to advance, he would have had to kill all of them. Pinchas was able to come in. And everyone said, he comes from a pagan family. He's into this too. And that's how he was able to squeeze his way in and kill him without being suspect. Yes?
Moshe killed the Egyptian with like Shem Shem, right? Like he said something and like...
That's the Medrash.
Is that what happened?
I don't know.
I was just saying, like hypothetically, I don't know. Like you can like kill people with words of power. Maybe you could like paralyze them, or maybe you didn't have to kill the Shimonite guards. You could just like make them like fall asleep or collapse or like, I don't know, just like kind of like, other, if we're gonna delve into the realm of like supernatural fan. I'm not saying that that's like impossible. I'm saying like
I didn't delve there. Maybe. I agree.
It's like, why would he have had to kill him? Maybe you could have just been like, you know, like sleep.
But if he did, that would parallel his words in Parshat Korach.
What do you mean?
Well, in other words, the relationship that Moshe has with the ground. That he asked the ground to swallow up Korach. He doesn't go and beat Korach. He doesn't touch Korach. So if already this is Moshe's relationship with the ground, then it could very well have whatever Shem Hashem, whatever he used, rather than actually physically beating him.
Right. So that deserves a broad discussion over why is it that Halachah Moshe Sinai says Kana'im Pog'im Bo? What does that mean? Chayiv Misa or not Chayiv Misa?
What does it mean?
Means that when a person is having an illicit relationship with a non-Jewish woman, so then the Kana'im, those that are zealous, are permitted to kill him at the time that he's doing it. That's at that moment. So you have to be a board-certified Kana'i. Meaning it has to be that the rabbinate, that the courts say this is a true person who's really living on that high level of piety, like Pinchas, before he went to do it, he went to court. He said, hey, isn't this the halacha? Moshe said, you're authorized to do it. But he went and asked first.
That's great to hear, because I never knew that before. That was always a debate in the other places that I heard about this. You know, Pinchas was the exception, and normally you can't go without a Beis Din. But you say he did have a Beis Din first.
Sure.
Okay. Great.
Has
yeah.
Has ever practiced at any other time in history?
I don't remember. I don't have any such recollection. The Talmud discusses it, but Lemaisa, I don't know. So, Pinchas didn't act, and he stood to lose a lot, because everyone around him disagreed with him. Meaning, they said, who's he to stand up to the leader? Who's he to kill a princess? And in fact, there was room to start wondering, you know, what are you going to do? She is the princess. She is the daughter of a Midianite king. Yeah, politics. He asks, what am I supposed to do? That's what I'm supposed to do? Okay, so then that's my job. And the tribe started talking about him. Maybe we should beat him up. Who does he think he is? And that's why Hashem shows up on the scene and says, give him my covenant of peace, Briti Shalom. And notice that in the word shalom, we have a tradition that the vav is broken, what's called a vav ketu'ah. Chazal tell us there's a stress on the word shalom. There's a whole chapter on the importance of peace. Meaning, very often we think if you stand up against evil, so you're not for peace. And that's not true. You want to attain peace, then sometimes you have to eradicate that which is evil in order to attain peace. And that's what we find, that Pinchas gets a covenant of peace from God. And until this point, Pinchas was not considered a Kohen. And from this point onward, Pinchas gets the rights to Kehuna. Pinchas, we have a tradition, is later on known as Eliyahu. Eliyahu is known as Eliyahu HaTishbi. That maybe we'll discuss that a little bit later. Why is he known as Eliyahu HaTishbi? Tosfos says because he was from the inhabitants of the city of Yavesh Gilad. Tishbi comes to stress Yoshev, that he was from the real inhabitants of Yavesh Gilad. He had real citizenship there. Others want to say a different shot, that Tishbi is to reflect that he was Shav, that he lost his prophecy. Later on in Pinchas' life, he was too zealous about things that he shouldn't have been. And that's why he lost his prophecy. So Pinchas continues as Eliyahu, and that's the same Eliyahu that keeps going till today. He becomes an angel. Hashem tells us to maintain a vengeance against the Midianites. We have a very important halacha here. One who causes his friend to sin is worse than one who kills him. So a guy calls me up a few years ago. He has friends from his past, friends who are Christian missionaries. And they're coming to visit Israel, and could he have them over in his house? So technically the way we'd view that is, just like you don't bring a murderer into your house, you don't bring them into your house. I'm very sorry that they're your friends from your past, but they are doing worse than killing people. They're killing people's whole future. That gadol ha-machtit chavero, he who causes his friend to sin is worse than he who kills him. And that's why Hanukkah is a greater holiday than Purim. Because in Purim they wanted to kill us, but in Hanukkah they wanted to make us lose Judaism. And to our mind, it's a person should rather die than lose his religion. And so that's why Hanukkah is a greater celebration than Purim. Even though technically in Hanukkah, had we converted, they wouldn't have killed us. They said, well, all we want from you is to be like us. Become good Greeks and we'll leave you alone. So, but that's exactly it. Yeah, life isn't worth living that way. And that's why Ammon and Moab, they can't enter the Jewish people. They brought us down with sin. the Midianites, Hashem says, maintain your enmity towards them. So why didn't we attack Moab? Why didn't we attack Ammon? So Chazal tell us that God foresees what's happening. And so God knew that in Moab there was a spark that still had to come out. Who?
Ruth.
Right? So Hashem says, for that little kernel that's still there, that has to come out of Moab, and I guess there are strengths in Ruth that she could only get as a descendant from Moab, don't attack the whole Moabite nation. So the Talmud tells us a funny story. It says that there was a rabbi who was visiting Shiva, and he heard the people saying, boy, it's so sad that God did this. What a terrible thing. And he got up and said, what are you talking about? God doesn't do terrible things. You might be sad for the person because it's hard for them. But don't tell me God does terrible things, because look at our parsha. When there was one worthwhile thing to come out of the whole Moabite people, God says, don't touch them. So if there would have been anything worthwhile left to come out of this guy's relative who passed away, they wouldn't have died. If they're dead, then God didn't do a bad thing. Because for good things, God's willing to keep a whole nation around rather than let the nation go. So that's a, wow, you say that in a Shiva house, you know. You read that Gemara and you ask yourself, what's going on here? But at any rate, the concept is an important one. That Hashem looks at us and sees what good is supposed to come from us, and that's part of Hashem's calculation for our good. Where if there's anything good left to come of us, then Hashem says, let me keep him around. So that's why Hashem says, don't attack the Moabites. Yeah. That's a good question. So when we're learning the Gemara, we got to go into that some more. So
don't try it to make sure it's
cold. Right. I'm with Avia. Right. So we're Moshe turns to God and says, I want a leader after me. And here we see a very interesting thing. When a person sees their end in sight, God's telling Moshe, you're going to go. So there are all kinds of thoughts that can enter a person's mind. What's Moshe's thought? Moshe thinks about the Jewish people. What's going to be with them after I go? And so, when Hashem tells him he's going to pass away, Hashem says, go take a look at the land of Israel because your time is nearing. So Moshe says, I need a leader. Who's going to be in charge of my people? And we see Moshe's greatness here. Before he works on anything else, he works on what's going to be with the people. God tells Moshe he should take Yoshua. And it seems that Yoshua was not necessarily the top disciple here. It wasn't the answer Moshe was expecting. Yoshua's greatness was in his consistency and in his care for others. Every day after class was over, Yoshua would set up all the chairs so that tomorrow when people would come to learn, the chairs would be set up. You'd think you're the top student of Moshe Rabbeinu, you have better things to do than set up the seats. No. That's not beneath his dignity. He sets up the seats so that they'll all be able to learn tomorrow. And Yoshua lo yamush mito haol. He's always there learning and learning and trying to get more out of Moshe. Chazal tell us, notzer te'ina yochal piria. He who watches the fig tree will eat its fruits. Very often people are willing to come when the fruits are ripe and enjoy the figs. But who's willing to watch over the tree as it produces figs and ensure that the bugs and the worms and everything doesn't come in? No, I want the figs in the end. No, it doesn't work that way. If you build and you build and you're consistent day after day, year after year, that's when a person gets there. And that's why Yoshua got there. No one else did. Moshe was expecting his kids would take over. His kids were top students. God says, no, Yoshua, he's the one who kept watching over the Torah. He's the one that has to lead them now. And Hashem tells him, before you pass away, you take him in front of everyone and appoint him. And here we see an interesting thing. We would think it's enough that Moshe tells the people. Yeshua's next. God said so. Who's going to argue? Not enough. God says, in front of everyone, take him to Elazar, you put your hands on him, and then let him take the leadership. Let him start asking the Kohen Gadol questions and getting answers. Let everyone see that he's the leader. While you are still alive, let everyone recognize that he's the leader. And here we see the importance of preventing machloket, ensuring that after a person leaves a post, it's very clear who's next in line. And that there's no room for doubt. We then come to a parsha, the parsha of the Tamid. Now there's a very curious medrash quoted in the introduction to the Ein Yaakov, where the rabbis asked, which verse summarizes the whole Torah? So different rabbis gave different answers, and then one rabbi says, this verse, where it says you have to have a consistent sacrifice. Every day, morning and evening, you have to have a consistent sacrifice. So that encompasses the whole Torah? So they want to say, yeah, consistency. That's one of the hardest things, and that encompasses the Torah, consistency. We can all have great moments. We can all have an epiphany. We can all have an arousal, an awakening, a renaissance. Everything's great. How long does it last?
Russia did a comeback at some point, right?
That's the toughest thing. You know, why someone once said, I am the best dieter. I've tried every diet on the planet. That's great. Why are you always trying new diets? Obviously, you're not the best dieter, right? We're all that way.
Mark Twain's like, easy to quit smoking. I've done it hundreds of times.
So that's that's an understanding that's offered in that medrash. We have the carbon of Shabbos. We have the carbon of Rosh Chodesh. Every day has its extra musaf, but every day has the tamid, meaning every day we bring a sacrifice in the morning and a sacrifice at night. You know how they'd bring the morning sacrifice? They'd stand facing the west with their backs to the east. You know how they'd bring the evening sacrifice? They'd stand facing the east with their backs to the west. And the idea was, we're always showing that our sacrifices have nothing to do with the sun. We're not worshipping the sun. We're worshipping Hashem. And that's why all the pagan gods would always face to the east, to where the sun rises. And our Kodesh Kodashim goes to the west. Right? We're always, as you go westward, it gets holier. We're always with our back to the east. The idea is that, again, we're showing that we don't worship the sun. We have the sacrifices of each day, and then we have a Rosh Chodesh sacrifice. Rosh Chodesh sacrifice, God says, bring a chatas offering for me. What does that mean, for me? So Chazal tell us a funny line. God says, I want you to bring an atonement for me, because I diminished the moon. What does that mean? So one understanding is, you're bringing a goat, which corresponds to the goat that was slaughtered at the sale of Yosef. Until today, the Jewish people need atonement for that sale of Yosef, where brothers were so cruel to their brother. And that's why every Rosh Chodesh, we bring that sacrifice. Okay, that's one understanding. Another understanding is that God says, I created a world with good, in a world with bad. Now, humanity has all kinds of answers as to why there's bad. But none of them are good enough. So humanity has to consistently deal with a world that's filled with questions. With a world that they see I run the world, and they have to accept I run the world. But they have to deal with the hardship that there is pain, there is hurt, and they don't have a good enough answer for all the pain and hurt. They have answers. None of them are going to be as good as they'd like. So there's pain in that too. So God says, every Rosh Chodesh is a time when the moon is diminished. And the diminishing of the moon represents this concept that you don't have two equal forces. There is a time of day with the sun shining, and then there's a time of night where the moon is sometimes more potent, sometimes less, sometimes more light, sometimes less. This idea that the moon was diminished, as we know from Chazal, initially the moon was not diminished. And then the moon spoke improperly and was punished. So why do you need punishment? Why does the moon have to be diminished? And no answer is good enough. Because at the end of the day, God is omnipotent. He can do everything. So he could have a world without punishment. There's no such thing as he cannot. So God says, I've put humanity in this situation where they have to deal and they don't have a complete answer for their dealings. And I want them to realize that, so to speak, even I feel bad about it. I have my reasons. But I want to have one sacrifice which reflects the fact that I share their pain. And that's the sacrifice of Rosh Chodesh, where Hashem says, so to speak, bring an atonement for me. God needs our atonement? No. But God is saying to us, you're right, you have a point. And I know you have a point. And I want to show you that in one small sacrifice, I want to show that I commiserate. I'm also saying, yeah, what a pity the world looks this way. Obviously, God isn't really saying it's a pity because he could make it different. But he's saying, let them at least see that on some level I'm commiserating with them. Yes?
What did the moon say that was so improper?
Ah, one second. I meant to say to Yaakov, he was waiting before you. Sorry.
Should we face our back to the moon during Kiddush Lavanah after we look at it?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. You look to the Siddur. What do you have to turn around for?
I was in Susia and they looked to Yerushalayim, not to the moon.
I don't know where they get that from. I know people do it these days. When I was a child, no one did it. I didn't see anyone doing it. And I don't know what the source for it is. I don't know what the source for it
is.
It says it about Shmona Esrei. Where does it say it about Kiddush Levana? I'm unaware of a source for that.
So look at the moon?
You look at the moon and then you say Birkat Alvana. Some people then turn to face Jerusalem. I don't know. Why don't they face Jerusalem when they make Kiddush? I don't know. I mean, you could face Jerusalem on every blessing, but Chazal said it for Shmona Esrei. I don't know. I don't know where this concept is. I can understand. We speak about King David. We speak about Jerusalem and the moon. I could hear all kinds of concepts, but I don't know of a source for it. So I don't know.
I mean, people used to worship the moon too, like,
right?
That's like the beings, like moon, like so. The idea of facing in the direction, not the moon.
That's why we end with Aleinu. We end Kiddush Levana with Aleinu. Shehem mishtachavim nevel v'reik. V'anachnu korim mishtachavim v'nei Hashem. We're bowing for Melech Machayim Lachim. Hu notei shamayim. He's the one that spread the heavens, etc. I didn't hear you.
To see the moon and why it's so important.
One second. He was waiting. Alex, sorry. What did the moon do wrong?
Yes.
So it says that the moon came to God and said, it's not befitting that you should have two kings using one crown. It's not right that you have two great luminaries, the sun and the moon. We're both giving equal light. He's by day, I'm by night. We shouldn't be equal. God said, you're right. Great idea. And diminished the moon and gave her a whole army of stars. That's the Medrash.
And now you're not.
Yeah, Yechiel. Okay, so remind me tomorrow. We'll try to have 5 minutes on Kiddush Levana. But we're short on time. Yeah?
The sun is obscured by clouds, just the way the moon is. So it's phases and the different levels of luminosity.
But the moon's obscured by the same clouds.
Yeah.
So that's like double the obscurity.
Great.
No,
yeah.
It's also clear all the time. So clearly
obscure. Okay. When we hit Sukkot, so we have the sacrifices of Sukkot. So we know that the sacrifices go down in number, right? And then you begin on the first day, you bring 13 cows. On the second day, you bring 12 cows, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, right? And then comes Shmini Atzeret. Hashem says, after the 7 days of Sukkot, Atzeret Yelachem, you have a holiday. Now, every other holiday has a special sacrifice, right? You know, on Pesach, we eat matzah, and we bring the Paschal offering, and we bring the Omer. On Shavuos, you have the Bikurim, right? You start bringing the Bikurim. You have the Shtei Alechem. Shavuos has its own idea. On Sukkot, so we sit in the Sukkot, we shake the Lulavim Esrog, and we have all these special sacrifices. These sacrifices. What's Atzeres? Medrash says Atzeres is like a parent whose child came, and they had a set time they were going to spend together. And when it's all over, the parent says, "Let's have one more day, just for the heck of it, just for us to be together." That's Shmini Atzeres. Hashem says, "I know you guys were with me 7 days, but you're going to leave me for a whole winter. I'm not going to see you 6 months now. Till Pesach, you'll come back to the temple. Let's take one more day just to be together." There's another medrash. The medrash says, what's the similar to a parent whose child gets ill? And when the child gets better, the parent says, "I want you home one more day before you go back." You know, it's interesting. When I was a kid, all parents did that. But then parents got more into having their jobs. And then when a kid gets sick, the first second you could send them back to school, you know, he's only got a sniffle, his fever's down to 38, boom, they send them out to school. No. There's a reason why parents hold the kid one more day and the kid gets better. And the Medrash says, that's the idea of Shmini Atzeres. God says, you've had your time together with me, you've been here the whole Yom Tov, now you're great, you're ready to go back. But instead of going back cured, I want you to go back strong. Take one more day just for us. And that day has become, over the years, Simchat Torah. In the Torah, it doesn't say it should be Simchat Torah. It's just an 8th day, a holiday just for us. We don't sit in the Sukkah. We don't have to shake Lulav and Esrog. Nothing. Just a holiday. We have coffee, we have cake, we have tea. We sit with our friends. We eat good meat. We drink good wine. And we have one day which has no mitzvah other than to celebrate our connection with Hashem. Shmini Atzeret. Hashem says, take one day just for us. Then we go back to our jobs and our work, and we have a whole winter out until we come back on Pesach. So I'll see you guys Bezrat Hashem tomorrow night.